Well, we have returned from summer camp, tired, but rejuvenated, excited. A lot of good things happened through the summer, through the camps. It's been an exciting summer, but one that goes by very, very fast. When those weeks of summer camp take place, summer flies by. I want to take the time today to go through and address the summer camps and what takes place. I want to do it in a little bit different way than I normally give a sermon. And so it'll be something that I think the kids will enjoy. But also, there's a lot of things that take place. And many times we, as members, don't get a chance to participate in the camp or to see the camp. And what is taking place, what's taught, how camps are organized and run. So I want to take the time to go through that today and focus on not just one of the particular camps, but the preteen camp, teen camp, and then what we did on extended session. So preteen camp began in June, and we had a lot of different campers were there for the first time, some staff there for the first time. The preteen camp and the teen camp are something very unique from each other. Even though they're at the same place, we use the same facilities, the camps themselves are quite different, and there's a different feel to both camps. This year, we had 20 campers at preteen and 38 staff. So with 20 campers, that's a little bit lower number than we normally have. We've already got some lined up for next year, about 10 more campers than what we had this year. So we're looking for numbers to increase. 38 staff. So when we say that the campers, nearly two staff to one camper, the campers are well managed. They're looked after, have a lot of staff to take care of 20 campers. But the teens come and serve at the preteen camp, and we encourage that. Nearly half of our staff are teen staff, and we want to encourage that every year because we want the teens to learn to contribute back to what they are able to participate in the teen camps, but also they learn a different aspect of camp, a different aspect of serving. And when our teens come to preteen camp and they serve, especially after they've come a few years and then they take in a counseling position. And I've had so many of them say, I didn't realize what we put our counselors through when I was younger. And now I know what counselors have to go through. And I know how hard it is to, people have used the term herding cats, trying to keep all the campers together and direct them where to go. But they learn. And so it's not only for the campers. Camp is designed for the campers. It is engineered around that. We plan things out. We plan the activities. We plan the education. But it's an overall package. It includes training and preparing individuals who are serving and also preparing for the future. But the camps are quite unique, one from another. Years ago, I was working at Camp Pinecrest, and I shared this in our staff training at the teen camp this year. But the individual who ran that particular camp is part of a very large organization, and they had multiple thousands who would go through that summer camp during the year. He was talking to me and another individual, and he said, you guys don't just run a summer camp. He said, you run a training camp. And he said, what you guys do put our camps to shame. And he said, you have a program, not just where the kids come in and they have fun and everything is all about the kids. He said, you run a training program. He said, everything is structured and everything falls into a purpose. It's not just to have fun. It's a continual growth process. And he goes, I see that year after year and the changes of individuals, the changing of staff. And he said, it's just something amazing to him. But he said, you don't just run a summer camp, you run a training camp. And that has stuck with me over the years because working with young people, working with the youth, the campers, working with teen staff, working with others, we really do run a training camp. We train the preteen campers. We teach them, and they become teens. And we teach them as teens how to serve the preteens. And as they get older, they become young adults. And as young adults, they start working with the teen camps and teaching and training with teen camps, which, again, is a totally different avenue of camp. There's a passage I use in our staff training. It's Psalm chapter 78 and verse 2. And it applies to the direction of camps and what we do here. But Psalm chapter 78, and in verse 2, he says, I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and have known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children, telling to the generation to come praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works which he's done. He said, we're going to tell them to generations to come. And passing along the truth, and as parents we do that, and we recognize that, especially when we have our Christian living or our compass checks, and we ask some of the kids questions. Some of them can spout things off very quickly, and it's amazing, even at the ages of 5 to 12, how much they know. But we teach them to the generations to come. Verse 5, he said, for he has established a testimony in Jacob, and he has appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, and that the generations to come might know them. Multiple training of generation after generation of individuals who are going to prepare, teach, and continue the process. And it says, to the children who would be born, that they would arise and declare it to their children, and that their hope, or that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of the Lord, but keep his commandments. For the short period that they're at camp, and preteen camp is only 4 days long, but they are at camp and they live God's way of life 24 hours a day for those 4 days. And it is with others also, others that believe the same things, others that are being taught the same things. And so they live it in an environment that makes it perfect for growth. There's a lot of special bonds that are built. This is a photo of all the campers and staff for the preteen camp this past year. And again, they're well supervised, having 38 staff. And we go through the process of staff training, preparing the staff for the campers to arrive. And then when the campers arrive, then we start into orientation. In staff training, we tell the staff that you're going to have to introduce the activities for the staff, or for the campers, rather. And so when the campers come in, make it exciting, make it something fun. And so here Mr. Wynot and Mrs. Wynot made a character of Mr. Integrity and introduced him to the preteens as Mr. Integrity, and had on his hat had all these different aspects of integrity. So we want, again, to bring them in, get them excited about what they're going to do over the next week. Arts and crafts. See a couple of our talented young ladies here holding up different things. They were able to paint some of the sequoias. They did several things in arts and crafts. Kayaking was a new activity this year. It has been done at some of the other camps. We had blow-up kayaks that we brought back from Camp Cherokee this past year. They had got some different kayaks and asked us if we would like to use those. So this was the first year for kayaking, and I'll show a little bit more of that later. So we were able to bring in kayaks and add that to some of our activities. Each year, there's a fundraiser in Texas, and some of you may have heard about Boot Scoot. It is a barbecue and dance and fundraiser, and the funds that are raised have contributed to the scholarships in the camp program, but they've also contributed to the camp needs. This past year, they wanted to directly get involved in purchasing some of the equipment that we needed for camps. And so each of us sent in some of the things that we were going to be purchasing, and Boot Scoot actually contributed to buying some of those things. Every year in the pool, we buy a different thing that's blown up that they can climb around on and play in the pool. We've had a swan. We've had a duck. So this year, I found something that I thought would be appropriate for the kids. And it's a giant blow-up bull that they could get on. I thought, well, Boot Scoot, since it's a barbecue and cowboy type of thing, we got the bull. And, of course, the kids enjoyed climbing on it and using it. We were able to save it and use it for teen camp as well. Here we have Mr. O'Malley with the Field Games Cup. He was over Field Games this year, and teaching the kids some of the games and things that they participated in, making it exciting that they wanted to achieve and earn that Field Game Cup. And then Mrs. Anderson was over swimming and some of the things that took place in the pool. I want to talk about the theme of camp this year because the theme, as it is established, lays out how the camp is focused, what is focused on, how the activities are run, how the compass checks, and what is planned around compass checks. And this year's theme, and this is a banner that was sent to all the camps and something that we had on our notebooks as a reminder, but the theme of camp is walking with integrity. And with the tagline, "Integrity is doing the right thing even when no one is watching," by C.S. Lewis. Doing the right thing even when no one is watching. Now that's an easy concept to be able to explain, especially to our preteens, that you know, it's not just doing what's right when people are watching you. And you ask the question, how many of you have ever done something that you shouldn't just because your parents weren't watching? A few hands go up, and as they see other people, oh yeah, me too. We don't want to admit, oh yeah, I've done things because of that. But they begin to understand that integrity is that even when no one's watching, we're going to do the right thing. When we come up with a theme as camp directors, when we have our camp director meetings in November, we discuss in choosing a theme how it's going to be most effective. We narrow it down. We hash through multiple ideas. But we come up with something that can be integrated both into preteen and into teen camps, and something that is going to give them a lasting memory and something that they can learn from and grow from. And so with preteen camps, we teach on a different level, but one that they can grasp and learn. I asked the campers at preteen, what does it mean to walk? And of course they, you know, just put one foot in front of the other and walk. And I asked, well, what does it mean then to walk with integrity? And so we start introducing some concepts and ideas. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 12. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 12. He says, "Now, O Israel, what does the Lord God require of you but to fear the Lord your God and to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today for your good." He said, what does he require of us but to fear God and to walk in all his ways? And again, the way of life that we are following is a walk. It's something progressive. And we try to add that to our themes. And again, this particular theme, walking with integrity, it's not just integrity or knowing what integrity is. It is walking with it. It's making it a part of your life in everything you do. The term walk, as I explained to the campers, means to live by or to continue going in a certain direction. Not just hit and miss. Every once in a while, I go that direction. No, it is to continue in the direction. The dictionary definition, and I will give some other definitions as well, but the dictionary definition of integrity is the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles and moral uprightness. Second definition is the state of being whole or undivided. We're told in 1 Kings 9, verse 4, that David walked with integrity of heart and in his uprightness. He walked with integrity of heart. Integrity was something that became a part of him in everything that he did. Now, he made mistakes, and we all make mistakes, but yet he could still walk with integrity. And even at the ages of 6 to 12, our kids know what it means to walk in a certain way of life and to walk in that way. And that way is being taught to them by their parents. It's being reinstilled at camps, and it's something that we can continue to grow. So they learn not only what integrity is, but if they're going to walk in it, we break it down even further into words and descriptions of things that they can understand. Certain descriptions of integrity, standing up for what you believe in. That's something that many of our kids will have to face, especially in public schools or at work. Treating everyone equally and fairly. And many of these things we go through in the camp rules of what is expected while they're at camp. Being open and honest, telling the truth. Being responsible for your actions, respecting your environment and other people and yourself. Integrity is a way of life. Integrity is, when most people give one word descriptions, they'll say honesty or truthfulness, and that is true. But it is a way of life. It's not just one particular thing. It's what we say and what we do all of the time. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 7. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 7. The righteous man walks in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. So the righteous man walks in his integrity. He walks a certain direction, and it is the integrity. And we talk about where the integrity comes from. We don't establish our own integrity and walk in it. Integrity and what makes up integrity comes from God. But the righteous man walks in his own integrity. You can't walk in the integrity of another individual. Integrity is something that's built within the heart, within the mind and the thinking. But it says he walks in his integrity and his children are blessed after him. It's a pattern. It's something that happens over and over. And if you're walking in integrity and you're training your children, then when your children grow, they have already established in them a certain amount of integrity through what you have taught them, and they can then pass it on to their children, to generation after generation. I want to read a few quotes, and we went through many quotes, especially over the course of the two camps. But some of these quotes are quotes that describe, from the world's perspective, what integrity is. Integrity is choosing courage over comfort, choosing what is right over what is fun, fast, and easy. It is choosing to practice our values rather than simply confessing them. People confess values. Oh, yeah, here's what's right, here's what you should do, but fail to live it. And again, it is choosing to practice those values. Another quote, do what you know is right always. With commitment to your deepest convictions, you stand tall against time and tide. Said, if you hold fast to that always, if you stick with integrity. And stories were given by those who were presenting Christian Living and Compass checks of individuals who stood by integrity, and they were known as individuals of integrity, and others who didn't live up to that standard. And again, they can learn from bad examples and from good examples. You're probably familiar with Zig Ziglar, motivational speaker. He says, with integrity, you have nothing to fear since you have nothing to hide. You're not living a double life. You're not living a different standard. With integrity, you will do the right thing, and so you will have no guilt. If we focus on doing what's right and we hold by that, as it says, always, doing what is right all the time, you don't have a guilt of, somebody's going to find out that I didn't quite live up to what I said I was going to do. So we go through some of these quotes and we talk about them and we ask the children questions about these particular quotes and how this applies to life. And even at that age, ages of 5 to 12 at the preteen camp, they begin to understand it very quickly. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 9. Proverbs chapter 10 and in verse 9. He who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. You know, when God says there's nothing done in secret that will not be made plain, here he says, if you walk with integrity, you walk securely. You've got a security about you. You've got a standard that you follow. But if you pervert your ways, he said, you're going to become known. If you try to hide things, or if you're dishonest, or if you try to do things that are not done in integrity, you will become known. So we learn to walk with integrity. We avoid doing what's wrong, but we focus on what is right. And it becomes a way of life, something that becomes a part of us. Another quote, integrity is choosing your thoughts and actions based on values rather than on personal gain. Choosing thoughts and actions based on values. Now, we'll get into looking at other descriptions and definitions of what integrity is, but integrity is a strict moral standard following an ethical code. And we talked about what that code is, but it's based on values rather than personal gain. We don't do things because how can I benefit from it? How's this going to help me? Integrity is not about what's in it for me. It's about standards and a way of life and values and morals, and it is about something that is expressed to others. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 God intended for us to pass this along to generation after generation, His way of life, His standards, His values, that moral code. And in Deuteronomy chapter 6, He explains, as it says here in the other quote, "Do what you know is right always." Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4, He says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart." Now, as we read about David, David walked with integrity of heart. We talked about how David, the moral values and that moral code that he had became a part of him. And that's why he says, "I meditate on your way day and night." But he said, "It is in your heart. And these things which you commanded shall be in your heart." The mission statement of camp, and we go through this in our staff training, in preparing for each of the camps. The mission statement of camp is, our mission is to assist parents in helping our youth recognize and reach their God-given potential while learning that God's way of life works best because it yields both benefits in this life and in the one to come. We want our campers and the young people to realize life is fun, and it's meant to be fun, and it can be fun. And it can even be fun when you develop that way of life and you begin to live that way of life and you realize living God's way of life is fun and you don't have the negative consequences that come along with it. But it is teaching them that it yields benefits both in this life and in the life to come. You're preparing for something much greater in the future. Verse 7, he says, "You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk about them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up." It is talking about God's way of life and this system of beliefs all the time. And at camp, it's discussed, and it's not an awkward environment where, I don't believe that, or I've never heard any of these things. It is youth who are grown up in the church, and they continue to build on that knowledge year after year. But it's all the time. And he says, you teach them this way of life. You teach them this code to live by on a continual basis. And as staff, we add to that. The mission is to add to what the parents are already doing in helping their children. Verse 8, "You shall bind them as a sign in your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." And we do integrate the theme and what we're trying to teach them in decor and other things around camp. And again, we don't just learn about integrity or what integrity is, but we become a person of integrity. We start to develop that and begin to internalize and put into our heart and mind what integrity is, how to live by it, and then practice it in the daily routines of camp. And so they learn to walk with integrity. The theme is used in many ways. I want to look at show you some of the decor, some of the things that are reminders. And we can think, well, you know, it really, the children will see some of these things, but what do they really remember? Many of them can remember years back and different themes that we had over the years. This particular year, this is something from the teen camp. We made bookmarks, something that they can remember. It is of the theme and the logo, as you saw on the banner, but something that they can take back with them. And something that is a reminder. Here you see the banner, which is up, and then we have Camp Sequoia, and then the theme listed on one of the directional arrows, walking with integrity. And that's something that they see in various places throughout camp as we have different meetings. Some of the decorations we had on the tables shows people moving, people walking, backpacking. But the theme again, walking with integrity. So they see it when they come in. And this goes back to Deuteronomy. When they lie down, when they rise up, when they go to eat, is something that is a reminder continually throughout camp, something to help them to be able to remember the theme by. These are sticker footprints that are on the table. And we're not just learning about integrity, but walking in integrity. It's a motion. It's moving forward. And something that we want them to continue to take with them and remember after camp. Here's another banner in one of the other areas of camp, walking with integrity. You see that around. And so when we ask the campers and we get to Christian Living or Compass Check, what's the theme of camp? They all spout up. They all know what it is because they've seen it all around. And it's something that is easy to add to then with instruction. This is in one of the dorms. Each of the dorms have their own ability to decorate their dorms as the counselor. And so some of the counselors would put up walking with integrity around the dorm. But this particular one shows the banner of integrity. So even when they're sleeping, when they get up in the morning, there's a banner that they're around the room that says walking with integrity. We want camp to be fun, and camp is designed to be fun. If camp wasn't fun, I don't think our campers would look forward to it every year. It's fun for staff because we enjoy being together. We enjoy providing activities and things that they're going to learn from. But we want camp to be fun. And we want them, as the mission statement of camp is, to know that there's benefits now, to enjoy those benefits, and to understand that God's way of life works. It's blessed, and it continues to work, and that it is rewarding now, but the greater reward is something that's in the future. We provide, for fun, novelty Olympics. You can see here, the goal is to squirt the water into the hole. For the campers, many of their goals is to squirt their counselor in the face. So that's something that they enjoy. They get a kick out of getting water all over one another in novelty Olympics. Here you see them running through the field, and they just look so happy. They were both chasing me with a water balloon, hoping to get me wet. But it's nice to see them excited and wanting to have fun like that. And then we also do, as part of a novelty Olympics, we do a counselor makeover. So the campers have to dress up their counselor. This is how they dressed up one of our teens here. I think you'll recognize her, even though she's a little pale in the picture. But they enjoy being able to dress up a counselor. We have different things. Then they have to utilize whatever's in the bag and then come up with something. And then one of the campers has to describe, this is what we created. This is the makeover. This is what we made with our counselor. Something that they enjoy in having fun. The activities are designed not only to be fun, but we want them to learn some skills and learn some things that they can develop into hobbies over the years. The archery, BB guns, those kind of things. Many of them have never had an opportunity, if they live in the city, to even try. So they learn skills. We go through safety. We go through different parts of the bow and arrow, describe what they are. And they begin to develop some skills. And some of them, over the years, we watch them become more and more interested in some of these type of things and then invest. And then they start practicing. And they said, now I started taking archery lessons. And you realize they gained a desire for knowledge and for some type of activity that they want to build on. Gaga ball. And gaga ball is one of those things, especially at preteen camp, they can't wait for us to get that cord up. And as soon as it's set up, they're in there and dust flying, the gaga ball's moving around and enjoying gaga ball. This is a picture of field games. Some of the games that they were practicing, they gathered together in a huddle. You see them chasing each other in the field games, burning a lot of energy. We try to space out the activities through the day where they burn energy, get the rest they need, make sure they're drinking plenty of liquids, and then get back out and do other things. Here's a picture of swimming, and they get to ride the bull. Other dorm mates would shake the bull around, and they would timing each other to see how long they could stay on. Then our kayaking. In kayaking, we decided to stay in the pool because even though the pond was full, it had a lot of moss, and it was a little bit green. So we said, let's stay in the swimming pool this year and see what we can do within the pool, but it worked out well. Two or three kayaks, they each learned different. They learned the parts of the kayak, they learned the parts of the paddle, how the paddle works, and then learned the different strokes. And I was impressed. Many of them very quickly picked it up. And out of the preteens, there were the greater majority, at least two-thirds, had never done kayaking before. So it was a great activity to be able to add in. We also have a challenge course, and for some of the campers, being age 5 to 12, some of these things that they do are challenges, and we want to challenge them. We want to, as preteens and as teens, push them out of their comfort zone. For some of them, just being at camp away from parents for 4 days is a big push out of their comfort zone. But in challenge games and challenge course, we have different obstacles and things that they have to go through. And at first, it looks intimidating, but then once they go through it at least once, then they want to go back and start doing it again. There's a cargo net that they climb over, and the cargo net is about 10 foot tall, so they climb up that, climb over the top, and then back down. For some of the adults, it's even intimidating. But the campers all do that. They all participate and are able to push themselves and push their limits on particular things in the challenge course. And then going along a line, you have to walk on one and hold on to the other and move yourself across the line. And again, something that the fears and obstacles that they face, it builds confidence within the campers. Not only do we have the activities and the fun, we mentioned the education. And I want to talk about education for a moment. In the compass checks, now compass checks is what a compass does, it points you in the right direction. So in the morning we have a very short compass check, they're 10-12 minutes long, and it points the person or points the campers in the direction for the right for the day. So we have our compass checks in the morning, and it's just something short, something that they can think about. It includes the theme, but it gives them something to think about through the day. And then throughout the day we have various Christian living classes, one for the preteen camp, we have one each day, built into the activity schedule, and for the teen camp, we have them in the evenings. I'll pass by that one quickly. All right, so here you see in our Christian living class, one of the definitions of integrity is being whole or complete. And what I did is I took a bucket and I had handed out papers, and all the campers had to write down one word or one phrase that described integrity. And I had them all put it in that bucket, and I mixed it up with a whisk, and I said, okay, now if we take out an ingredient, if we take out one of these things, can you still have, and I'd say, can we still have integrity if we take out honesty? I've got all these morals, I've got these values, but I'm just not honest. Well, if you're not honest, it's... you can't be a man of integrity or a person of integrity. So then I drew a few more out. Can you have integrity without following rules? Or can you have integrity without having values? No, integrity is being whole or complete. And so what I did, you see these cups on the table. Under each of those cups, I made sugar cookies. And I said, I need four volunteers. And they came up and I said, there's four sugar cookies here. I said, one of them has all the ingredients, and the others are missing an ingredient. And so for the first one, she raised her cup, and she had a cookie, sugar cookie, had all the ingredients except for flour. And I said, can you leave out an ingredient? It was kind of a mess to make as well. It's mostly sugar, and we found it quite interesting as... I won't mention her name, but the person who picked up the cookie, she takes a bite and she goes, yuck. And as we talked and as they went along, she finished off her sugar cookie. It wasn't too bad, obviously. But they learned the lesson that you can't leave ingredients out. You can't say, well, I have integrity, but I'm missing certain things. It takes all of them together, and it takes practicing them all the time. And again, they begin to learn some of those things. Mr. Register took Mr. Integrity's hat, was wearing it during his Christian living class. And then Mr. Wynott, with his class, brought in a lot of different balloons, and he had them do this drill where they had to keep the balloons off the ground. And if the balloon touched, you're supposed to go sit down. And what was typical is, oh, my balloon didn't touch the ground. Or if you talk, you're out. If it touches the ground, you're out. And so all of them kept there, and he's like, wait a minute, didn't your balloon hit the ground? Yeah. Well, that means you're out. You have to have integrity. You have to bring yourself out of the game if you do one of those things. So these lessons, again, it's different with both of the camps. With preteen camp, we teach on a different level, and it's something that they can remember, enjoy, but it's also giving them principles and things that they can learn from. The lessons and many of the quotes and ideas and some of the things were repeated at the teen camp, but it's taught on a much different level. Teen Camp Sequoia, we go into more depth, and we want them to think a little bit more deeply on those topics. They're covered in a strong spiritual aspect or spiritual angle of looking at things. We want them to think a little bit more than they do as preteens, and we want them to begin to understand in a depth of their own what it means to walk with integrity. We have our Christian livings at the amphitheater, and in the evenings everyone will gather at the amphitheater and we have our Christian living outside. Compass checks are done in the morning in the dining hall right after breakfast, and then Christian living at the amphitheater. We discuss structural integrity. The word integrity is used not only in a person's character and values, but the word integrity, if a building collapses, they say, well, the integrity of that building was not secure. It didn't have structural integrity. And if a building doesn't have structural integrity, it will fall. In one of the compass checks, the individual used a can of Coke. And he had an empty can of Coke and had somebody come up and stand on it, and immediately it crushed. And they had somebody come up and stand on a can of Coke that was still full, hadn't been opened yet, and got the biggest individual in the room to come stand on it, and it would not crush. Because if it has integrity, if it is inside structurally correct and on the outside, it has integrity. And again, discussing that type of integrity, it's on the inside. It has to be not just what people see, but integrity has to be from the inside, from the heart. We discuss personal integrity from many different aspects, from example, the example that we should have. That integrity is a part of the heart, that we commit ourselves to a code, we commit ourselves to a way of life. And we discuss the opposite of integrity, which is hypocrisy. The Google definition of hypocrisy is the practice of claiming to have moral standards or beliefs to which one's own behavior does not conform. So it's a standard of beliefs, and you claim that, but yet you don't perform to that. Merriam-Webster defines it as a feigning to be what one is not, or to believe what one does not. It is giving people the impression that you believe something when you don't. Behavior that contradicts what one claims to believe or feel. Especially the false assumption of an appearance of virtue or religion. Now, many people in the world have an appearance of religion. They appear religious. They appear, oh, I'm a very convicted individual. But yet, hypocrisy is contradiction of that. Assuming that appearance without having the integrity. So integrity is doing what's right even when no one is watching. Well, hypocrisy is to do the opposite of what you say you're doing. It's only doing what's right when people are looking. Somebody who's hypocritical, well, when people are watching, I'm going to act a certain way, but then I'm going to be myself when I'm not around others. Or it's only doing what's right when people are looking. To do the opposite of what we claim to believe. There's many over the years in the church who claim to believe things. I believe everything the church teaches. But then privately, no, I've never agreed with that. Never bought into it. So with hypocrisy, it is missing some of the key elements. And again, to have integrity, you have to be whole. Merriam-Webster's definition of integrity is a firm adherence to a code, especially a moral or value code. It is incorruptibility. So it's firm adherence to a code. And we talked about where that code comes from, that it is God who gives us that code. We don't develop it on our own. We don't say, well, I'm going to come up with a good code that we can all live by. You know, God already came up with that code, and as Deuteronomy says, we're to teach it to our children all the time. But it's a firm adherence to a code. It's not just, oh, I'm going to do this every once in a while, or I'll follow those values when it's convenient for me. It is a firm adherence to those codes. We can't choose to live God's way of life and only do it partially, or only be a weekend Christian or a Sabbath Christian. So we talked about that moral code and where it comes from. Merriam-Webster, in the definition of integrity, says unimpaired condition or soundness, the quality or state of being complete, undivided, or whole. There's a verse that describes the basis of finding that moral code. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16 says, all Scripture is given by inspiration of God, or it is God-breathed. It comes from God, and it is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, reproving things. It's for correction and for instruction in righteousness. God's Word is an instruction in how to live. It's been referred to as God's manual for mankind, the manual to live by. Verse 17, he says that the man of God may be complete, that the man of God may be whole, which is what integrity is. Some other translations say that the man of God may be perfect. He explains, thoroughly equipped for every good work. You have everything you need through the Word of God to be complete. And so this was a springboard for another area of integrity, and that is doctrinal integrity. I covered that on the last split sermon of the last day of teen camp, in doctrinal integrity. Because we can have personal integrity. There's structural integrity in buildings. There's personal integrity, which is of the heart. But there's also doctrinal integrity. Having integrity of a completeness of doctrine, completeness of teachings. And we talked about what doctrine means. But is it possible to walk with doctrinal integrity? The answer is absolutely. Yet many don't. Just like there are people who do things to be seen or do things just because they're being watched, there are some who refuse to maintain doctrinal integrity. And over the years, we've seen how individuals have taken doctrine, true doctrine, and begin to water it down, begin to change it from its pure form, and it becomes weaker and weaker. It doesn't have the structural integrity as we find in true doctrine. So God has given us everything we need through His Word, and since man has been given that moral code, we're to adhere to it. And we're to adhere to doctrinal integrity as well. Romans chapter 6 and verse 17. Romans chapter 6 and verse 17. He says, God be thanked that you were once the servants of sin, but you have obeyed from the heart. You began to implement this way of life from your heart, from your character. That form of doctrine which was delivered to you. He said, you obeyed from the heart a form of doctrine, and it was given to them, and it has been passed down, and it has been repeated, just as God commanded Israel to do in Deuteronomy. And that way of life and the teaching of God's way of life is something that has been given to us. It has been delivered. And we should be able with confidence to trust the church leadership in true doctrine. But we're told over and over, prove all things. Don't just accept it. Don't just buy it and say, okay, then if that's it, that's what I believe. That's not making it a part of the heart. Proving it, living by it, practicing it. And so we have to take that theme and begin to address it from a different way of not just teaching a concept, but teaching individuals how they can implement this in their life. Walking with integrity, one of the other areas that was covered in the last Christian living, used as Mr. Wynot had the integrity, I should say puppet, but integrity individual that he put together, and he said when he came in at camper orientation, he said, I'm walking with integrity. And he brought integrity in and began to describe what integrity was. Well, in teen camp, we talked about walking with integrity, that yes, you want to become a person of integrity, you want to walk that way of life, but it's also part of walking with integrity is walking with individuals who also have integrity. You can't walk with integrity if you are tied in, bonded with individuals who don't have integrity. It begins to draw on an individual, it begins to affect them. So Mr. Pennelly talked about choosing our friends, that we have to have friends who sharpen us, like iron sharpens iron. We have to make sure that we're not yoked with in business and in personal relationships, in intimate relationships. We're not yoked with those who are not a part of the truth, those who don't have integrity. But we have to, again, show them and explain to them how that works. This year for the teen camp, I won't go through the activities that we've done, but this year we added in a lake day. This particular lake is about an hour from the camp. That was another blessing in itself, is getting 76 people from the camp all the way over to a lake, 14 vehicles, and everybody made it there, followed each other, and got there at the same time. We didn't lose anyone in the mountains coming down, but able to enjoy lake day. And it was an entire camp being able to spend the day together on the lake. Lake day provides a lot of opportunities for individuals to get to know one another, to spend that time with each other. It is something that provides a unique environment. All the camp moving together, all the camp being there and participating. We rented three of these giant party barges that I mentioned, or that I showed before, slides off of them, everyone wearing their life jackets on the way out. We had eight kayaks, a paddleboard. We brought that giant bull that was out in the water, and then we had a giant blow-up duck, which lost its wings and eventually its head through the day as it became deflated. But that's what it was for, is for them to get out and enjoy. But campers from all of the dorms were able to come out and enjoy a casual activity and something that they could relax and enjoy at the lake. A camp provides an opportunity for young people to be able to develop some very close bonds. And one of the things that we do at camp is, it's not that we just want them to have fun. We want them to have an education. We want them to develop friendships so that they have the opportunity to walk with others who have those same beliefs, to develop bonds that last not just for a week of camp, not just through a year, but we know, and many of us who in the church went to summer camp as well, you develop relationships that last a lifetime. And again, we want them to develop those close-knit relationships and those close bonds. Our teens spend the camp years, year after year, getting to know one another, but they have a church bond that comes from common doctrine, from beliefs, from morals, from values that they all share, and they've learned some of the same way of life from their parents and from a church and from their friends. And again, it's something where they can continue to build on those relationships and build on the values and things that they're learning. It's not just relationship between the teens either. Staff, because I mentioned staff enjoying camp. We wouldn't be there if we didn't. But the staff enjoys the opportunity to spend time with other staff, spend time with the campers, and you know, even with the variation of age groups of individuals, they work together, they have fun together, and it is a family relationship that is built. See here, Mrs. Cheryl Tannert from Arizona, and one of our counselors. The campers get to know not only their counselors, but they get to know the other staff as well. And those relationships that are built, we see that year after year. And as staff travel around the world for the Feast of Tabernacles, campers will come up and go, "Do you remember me from camp?" And they're excited as staff members because they didn't realize, oh, they remembered me as a staff member. Not just all their friends, but they developed relationships with the staff members and with their peers. And again, it does help the entire camp to bond. This is a picture of the teen camp on the Sabbath with all campers and staff. And again, with a smaller camp like we have, there were 40 campers and 36 staff. We have 76 people at camp. With a smaller camp like that, it allows that type of environment to be created, to where the campers do get to know one another, where they do spend that time and develop those close relationships. Part of the education that we have at Sequoia on Wednesday night, in teen camp, we have a question and answer. And so they arrive on Sunday, and between Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and half the day Wednesday, we have them turn in questions. And the campers begin to develop their questions. We, at the Q&A, all four of the pastors sit down. We go through the questions that are given. If there's any additional questions, then we cover it right there. We say, does that answer the question, or is there anything more that you want to know about that particular subject? This year, we had 23 questions turned in, so quite a few. We went over in Q&A about a half hour, but all through the week, we kept saying, we need questions turned in, turn in questions, we need more questions, and then the last day, we got a lot of questions. And so because we said we want to have the integrity that since we've asked for questions all week long, we're going to have the integrity to answer all those questions. So we went a half hour over, but then extended some of the evening activities as well to make sure that they had the time that they wanted. But the campers get to ask questions that they want. They have whatever questions they want. They write it down. They put it into the box. And again, we go through and answer those questions. And they're not afraid to ask particular questions. And when we turn to those verses, we show them where it's at in God's Word. We give them answers to those questions. And they look it up and they want to know, is this really what God's Word says? Or how can you find this in the Bible? Or where does it say in the Bible? And we'll ask a particular question. The campers, again, come up with their questions, and they were a good list of questions. At the end of camp, when the split sermon that I gave not only the explanation of what doctrinal integrity is, but at the end of camp, I gave them the admonition to choose, that there is a choice that is to be made. We can learn what integrity is, and they can practice it for a week, and they can learn to walk with integrity or know what it means to put that in their mind, their character, and their thoughts, where it's instilled in the heart. But it still comes down to a choice. They'd learned about integrity, they'd practice it, but we can't make them choose integrity. As an individual, they have to choose integrity themselves. They have to choose to be a person of integrity. They have to choose to walk that way of life. They have to desire it. They have to see the benefits of it. They have to want it. And we try to create that, but it's still a choice. So camp provides an amazing opportunity for our young people to be able to do that. They can live it for a week, and some of them realize, you know what? It wasn't as bad as I thought. Having all these rules, all these guidelines, all these standards, all this teaching, it really is beneficial. It really is something to enjoy. And again, it provides an environment that is much different than Sabbath services. I want to change the subject a little. I want to give you a portion of what Mr. Register sent out this week from Central California. And as you know, there's been fires all over the California region. But it does tie in with the message I want to give and continue giving today on the summer camps. From Dave Register, this is from yesterday, August 3rd. He said, I mentioned in the pastor's weekly update, wildfires are a huge problem in western states, especially California. There are now 17 large wildfires burning in California. The Carr Fire, C-A-R-R, grew to almost 132,000 acres overnight and is 39% contained. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection reported Friday morning that the fire, which started on the afternoon of July 23rd, has destroyed 1,067 homes and a total of 1,567 buildings, making it the sixth worst fire in California history. Also, sadly, six people died in this fire. As far as we know, none of our members or their homes have been damaged. There's no loss to homes or property. We're very thankful for God's protection and blessing. Please pray for those affected by the fires. He says, we have several members living in the Redding, Anderson, and Red Bluff areas where we had to cancel services in Anderson last week because of the smoke and ash. The smoke has now dissipated somewhat. We plan to have services in Anderson today. He says, Linda and I plan to travel to Redding and webcast services to Citrus Ice and Lodi. We want to be with the brethren who have been affected by this serious fire. He says, we know firsthand that it is very stressful to be evacuated and not to know from hour to hour which way the fire will burn, perhaps destroying your home. He says, we were evacuated during the fire that ravaged San Bernardino Mountains in 2003. We were forced out of our home for 2 weeks and lived in a friend's RV in their driveway, watching news reports to see if our home had been burned. We know what it means to live under the stress of fire danger. He says, there's also a smoke advisory for Central Valley. And since we were up there for camp, the sunset, you could really tell that had that orange glow to it from the fire. But he said there's a smoke advisory for Central Valley, including Sacramento, the I-80 corridor. Please use caution when, while outside and traveling. The Carr Fire and the Mendocino Fire and Ferguson Fire are still burning and continuing to spread smoke all over Northern California, and it adversely affects those who have breathing issues. So we want to continue to remember them in our prayers. He sent that out last night. And again, it gives us an update as well as how the brethren are doing. I've had several from various parts of the country, including New York, send me an email. How are the brethren in California? We see that there's fires all over. But that kind of gives us an update on where the fires are and where things took place. When we started services today, we sing the song, All Things Work Together. And it does. When you put your trust in God and you commit yourself to Him and you're living that way of life, things do work out. Things do work together. In Central California, the Ferguson Fire started July 13th and it has still been burning. As of yesterday, the fire is only 41% contained. While we were at camp, we were watching this particular fire because it is in the Yosemite area. And watching that particular fire, it has burned 73,560 acres. Nearly 3,000 firefighters are still working on that one particular fire alone to get it under control. One firefighter has already lost his life on July 29th, fighting this fire as it began to spread. But I want to show you and share with you how God intervened in miraculous ways, not just once, but several times. And it wasn't during camp, but something that takes place after camp, and that is our extended session. Extended session is a group of the older campers that we take on a four-day backpacking excursion. We were not in danger of the fire, but the extended session plans were, and we felt under a little bit of pressure trying to figure out, is it going to be doable or not? Well, they closed parts of California, as you're familiar with. We were scheduled to go to Hetch Hetchy, which is an area north of the Yosemite Valley, and it is up higher in the mountains. It's above the 120 highway. They closed the valley because of the smoke that was settling in the valley and because of the danger of fire, and there's only one way into the valley and one way out. So they closed the valley. So we weren't going to be able to do the valley. We had hoped to take the campers down on the first day, pick up our permits, which we get in advance, and then do some hiking around some of the waterfalls in the lower part of the valley, and then go up to our campground up on the high country. Well, plans changed. Ferguson Fire grew and grew. Smoke became an issue. Even though they closed the Yosemite Valley, and it was still open in the high country, the smoke from the fires was continuing to get worse, and they said the air quality was very poor. The campground, which we had reservations for, closed down. Even though the fires hadn't reached there, the smoke and everything else was so bad that they closed the campground. So our first night, here we're leaving Sunday morning from camp. Sunday night, we don't have a place to go yet, and we don't have our housing now because they closed the campground. And I want to share this with you because I want you to know how God worked it out. Just as the song says, all things work together. It takes about 6 to 8 months of planning to get the permits, to get campground reservations. Campground reservations go live in January, and you literally, as you're typing things in, you see one open, you try to get it, and by the time you finish entering, somebody else has already got it. It happens that quickly. And so we get our permits to find trails that have permits available for, generally we take 12. This year we had 15. That's something that's very difficult to get a permit for a group that size. But to get the permits, reservations, food and supplies, and to get it all ready for the events, it's something that has to be done. And usually all of that has to be laid out in January or February. We prayed about it. We put it into God's hands. We decided on Sunday to go to Sequoia instead, even though our plans had laid out everywhere we were going to go and the fires hadn't affected it. It continued to grow, and so we did not want to put the campers or ourselves in any danger. So we decided to go to Sequoia, along with all the other thousands who had reservations for Yosemite, that moved down and began to fill Sequoia and Kings Canyon. We got there in the campground at Lodgepole, where we have to check in. I had no spots available. They said, well, maybe you can get some camp spots over at Dorsch Creek, which is about 20-minute drive away. And they said, but chances are slim because everybody's coming down from Sequoia, up in the mountains and in Yosemite. They're coming down and filling those spots. So we looked at backpacking permits first. We said, okay, well, since this is a 4-day adventure, let's get some permits so we could go into the backcountry. And so we looked at some trails. Most of the trails only allowed 12 people. We can split your group up and you can go in different directions, but you can't. You have to stay at least a half a mile from each other on the trails and camping. And we said, well, no, we'd like to keep the group together. And we've been in this area for multiple years, going back to 2009. And almost all the trails only allow 12 people. She said, well, we have one trail that I can get you on with 15 people, and it's the Twin Lakes Trail. It goes up. You can stay together. You can camp together. And she said, and it's available. And I said, we'll take it. So they gave us the permits for the Twin Lakes Trail. So the only one trail available. So we booked that permit for Twin Lakes. We said, okay, before we take the campers and go look at the big trees, let's establish our housing. So we drove to Dorsch Creek Campground. Now, 20 minutes away, we drove over there. The gate says full. And I said, well, let's drive down to the entrance at the box and talk to the department and see if we can get in. So we drove down the individual, the ranger at the station, she says, well, we only have 2 spots available. And she says, how many of you are there? And I said, 15. And she said, well, we're limited. You can only have 6 people per spot. And again, she says, well, I understand the situation that you're in and what you're going through. I'm not going to say anything. Take the 2 spots. You can put 15 people. So we got campground for the night, housing for that first evening, and it was made available. So then we went to the giant sequoias. Many of the campers had never seen the giant trees before. To walk through there to see some of those that giant trees was a new experience for them. And again, a good introduction into the weekend and through the week. At Dorsch Campground, we finally got settled in, spent the evening at Dorsch Campground, got a good night's rest. We were a little bit more relieved because now we had a place to camp the first night and we had permits for a trail. We had a place we were going, our destination. So then we started off on our hike. Again, it takes 6 to 8 months to plan these things out. We want to plan something that's challenging, but something that's very rewarding. And we want something that's going to be interesting to the campers. So the next morning we left for our three days on the trail, full packs, everything that we carry with us, everything that we need is carried in a backpack. And we started off on the trail. The first day we hiked 7 miles up with a 3,900-foot elevation gain, so almost 4,000 feet up. And so it was 7 miles. But it was challenging. And going up into the mountains, camping at 9,800 feet. So we enjoyed that opportunity. But what it does to campers is when you get to the top, this is what happens. These are individuals who dropped their packs, laid on the rocks, and enjoyed just resting. When you take a pack off, it almost feels like you're lifting off the ground because you've been carrying this heavy pack the whole time. But then once they got back on the ground, they went all the way down on the ground. Enjoyed the long hike, and it was very rewarding. But it's something that, again, we want something that is going, they're going to enjoy the hike itself. They want to enjoy being with other people, but we also want them to enjoy the destination. And so this is Twin Lakes where we camped, Glacier Lake at the top of the mountain, 9,800 feet. Get to swim in the lake. It has trout fishing, something very enjoyable. And it's also something very restful. One of our campers brought a hammock, which several took advantage of using to get some rest once we were on the top. The next day, we did a day hike to Ranger Lake, which is over the top of the peak there, 10,500 feet. So we hike up again, but we left our tents and all of our backpacks. We just take a day pack and enough water and snacks to hike over for the day. 3.5 miles out, 3.5 miles back. Almost the same 700-foot incline, 900-foot descent to the lake, and then coming back. And we reminded them, when you come back, you have to come back up the way we came down. So it's a 900-foot climb and a 500-foot descent. But we enjoyed this hike to Ranger Lake, and you could see the beautiful views. When you get on the pass going down to Ranger Lake, you're able to see all the way down into Kings Canyon. Something very, very beautiful, and seeing a lake that's crystal clear, has that greenish tint to it, something that the campers enjoyed very, very much. One thing we try to emphasize on extended session is to not only focus on the goal, and in the past we've done trips where we're pushing ourselves hard to get to a destination, and then we move on to another destination. We want them to enjoy the journey as well as the destination. Every night, we go through lessons of things that we learned through the day. Things that we learned on the trail, things that we should have done differently, things that affect other individuals on the trail. But we talk about lessons learned. And again, we want to enjoy the journey as well as the destination. When preparing for the kingdom of God, we're not just focused on, someday I'm going to get to enjoy this way of life. We enjoy it now, and that's instilled in the camp program. Living this way of life now, enjoying it now, it's a struggle, it's a trial. It's difficult to live that way of life in the world that we live in. But it is also something that's enjoyable along the way. Enjoying the journey, learning to appreciate the challenges that we face every day. But also looking forward to that final destination. On the last night, we came down the mountain. We hiked back down into Lodgepole. Actually made very good time coming down the mountain. When you're coming down 4,000 feet at the very end, it's trudging, carrying the full pack. As they heard the car noises in the parking lot, and as they saw the parking lot, the speed started picking up. And by the time we got down to the end, they were moving quickly because they realized we're at the end, we're at the bottom. But we came down the mountain into Lodgepole, and I said, well, let's check now with Lodgepole because we have one more night here. Let's see if they have any spots available. We asked the campground, and they said, well, I have one spot. How many of you are there? And we had two vehicles in line, and I said, there's 15 of us. And they said, absolutely not. There's no way. We have one spot and six people. And they said they had some earlier at Dorst, but the likelihood of you getting any spots over there are almost none. And one of the things we've done at the end of extended session and when we were in Sequoia National Park is after eating dehydrated food for 3 days, we want to buy them burgers and drinks at the lodge, at Lodgepole. So we explained that we were going to treat them to burgers, and Mr. Pennelly and I began to discuss the timing of things and how we wanted to do this. When you're in the wilderness, when you hike out into the wilderness, the first thing you do is set up camp. You want to have shelter. And so you establish your shelter. Then you work on food. So I said, well, let's get housing first. And then even though we have to drive 20 minutes to Doors to see if they have availability, if they don't, we're going to have to continue looking for housing. And then if we have to, we'll drive back and have dinner. So we drove to Doors Creek, same campground, and on the sign it says full. And the campers in my vehicle said, oh, it's full. We got to go somewhere else. And I said, no, let's drive down, talk to the ranger again, see if there's anything else available. I said, we're going to put it in God's hands. He's provided everything so far. And we kept reiterating that fact that God had provided it all. If we didn't get into Doors Campground, the rangers at Lodgepole said, well, you can drive out of the camp, which is about 40 minutes, and they said, once you get out of the national forest, then there's places you can pull over and just camp on the side of the road in the forest. No facilities, no water, no anything. You just find a spot that you can go into, park a vehicle, and camp. So that's not something we were looking forward to. So we drive down into the Doris campground, and there was an older ranger, and I waited in line, one person in front of me, and I said, do you have any spots available? He says, amazingly, yes. He said, we have two spots available. And he said, how many of you are there? And I said, 15. And he goes, sorry, can't do it. He said, you can only have six per spot. And he said, there's no way I can let you in on this campground. I gave him my sad eyes and asked him very sweetly, you sure there's nothing you can do for us? Here's our situation. Here's where we were. Here's where we were supposed to go, but because of the fires. And he finally succumbed, and he looked at me, and he says, if anyone asks, you have to say that you lied. And I laughed. I go, I'll tell you right now, I can't tell you that I lied, or I can't tell somebody else that I lied. And he goes, wait right here. Let me take care of the next customer. He took them and comes back and he goes, I'm going to put you in. You guys can have the campsites for the night. So we got back into Doris Campground again. He gave us those spots and it's something that we enjoyed. The final night, having a place to camp again, all within the Yosemite National Forest. And again, it was a blessing one after another. The two spots weren't together, but it worked out for us to be able to go in, have a place to set up camp that last night. As we set up camp, drove back to Lodgepole, had our burgers and drink. But on the way out, after he'd given us those two spots, we went in, set up our tents real quick, got back in the vehicles, less than 30 minutes. And when we drove back out of the campground, the shack was all locked up. They were gone for the evening. If we'd waited another 30 minutes, we would not have had campsites and wouldn't have been able to talk to the ranger and to give him my puppy dog eyes and ask for a spot. It would have not happened. So all of these things and the timing of it just worked out beautifully. We went back, had our meal, and then came back and enjoyed the evening. But we would have missed it by just 30 minutes. So the timing of things and the way God provided every single need that we had for that particular trip worked out for us. Now, there were a lot of valuable lessons, both from preteen camp, teen camp, and extended session. Prayers were answered in all of the camps. The weather that we had, everything that was taken care of and provided for us, God was there. And doors were opened wide when there was time of need. When we sang that song, All Things Work Together, it just reiterated what I was going to talk about today, that God does provide and God does make things happen. And he will open doors that you cannot open. But it was another successful year at the camp, and we appreciate all the prayers that you gave and all the contributions that you gave in encouragement. We appreciate that, and we look forward to another year ahead, hopefully without the issues that we had this year with fires and other things, but more confidence as campers and staff that God is there, God is providing, and he will take care of us.